Okay. Good morning. Usually they call me really loud, but today I'll just be kind of loud because I'm my head cold. I'm sorry you have to listen to that. I was just thankful my throat didn't hurt as bad when I got up this morning. So I'm excited to be here. Haven't we had a great week? I don't know about you, but I'm not ready to go home. I know that. But I've had a great week. I am encouraged. I feel much more ready to go home and get busy, you know. And like Kathy was saying yesterday, it's easy to lose that momentum and that focus. But I'm going to make a list of things when I leave here. These are my top five things that in the next few months I want to look back at this list, and these are things that I've started implementing at our congregation. I want to thank the congregation here for their hospitality. It takes a good congregation to be willing to host something like this. It's not cheap, and it says a lot about the people within that congregation when they're willing to host events like this. Let's see. The topic today, when your preacher gets down, as I was going through this lesson, I am pregnant and I am emotional, okay? And as I was studying for this lesson and preparing, I found myself just crying. And I think it was because I was kind of going back and reliving some things within our work and our marriage, and some things that maybe I had forgotten about. It just kind of brought all those feelings back. I kind of found myself in a funky mood, really. And Chris said, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "I don't know." But through it all, I feel much more encouraged after studying this lesson. I don't know many of you. Some people in this room I know very well. And I cannot wait to get to heaven with all of you. But there's some dear friends here that when I think of heaven, I think of them. And we're going to leave here in a few days and go back to our places. But it's sad, but at the same time, I know I'm going to see them again. And they're just as close to me as my true family, my blood family. But looking at many of you, I don't know you, I don't know your names, but I do know you. We all live in that famous little fishbowl. We live with the clear glass where people see our lives. And I don't know about you, but my fishbowl isn't perfect. And it's hard to let people see my fishbowl sometimes. Also, something else about you. How many of you looked in the mirror before you came today? I did. I think when a preacher's wife looks in the mirror, they are actually looking in the mirror and seeing different things than just the average person. You're checking, am I modest? Making sure everything's in place. You're checking to make sure, is this lipstick color too much? Will so-and-so think it's too flashy? You look to see, is so-and-so going to think this is too casual? Or is this even too dressy? We live a life that is examined by people. So I know you. I may not know your names, but I know you. I also know that we share one thing in common that's my favorite thing to think about. We are married to amazing men. Aren't we? I told you I was emotional. Just let me keep it together. We are married to those men that serve the Lord, and we get to be their biggest fan. Everybody else just calls them the preacher, but we get to call them our husbands. And that is awesome. So, although I may not know your name, I may not particularly know who you are in your story, but I know you, and I know about your lives. I was actually kind of humbled by the subject given to me because I thought, Wayne, I'm 29 years old, and there are women in that room that have been preaching and working in the ministry much longer than I have. But I feel like we all have our own stories, our own experiences, things that we've gone through. And just to give you a background, when I graduated from college, I got married at 21. When I graduated, we worked with a small congregation outside of Paris, where we are now, for 7 years, about 50 members. Couldn't pay us much. They paid us what they could, but they couldn't pay us much. I was a teacher for 4 years, so I taught in the local school. I always told Chris I brought home the bacon. But I brought home enough money that we could stay there and we could labor there, and we were comfortable And then we had Jack, and it was hands down a decision that I was going to be home with him. That's where I wanted to be. That's where I needed to be. And we withdrew that income, and when you take $30,000 out of the equation, it's very difficult. And we knew that was going to happen, but we were ready for it. And I am married to an amazing man who provides for his family. And he was lucky enough to have the skill of his father had taught him painting growing up. So my husband was a preacher slash painter. We called him PP, the painting preacher. But he painted. And my husband woke up every day at 7 o'clock and went to work and painted all day, came home, spent time with his family, took care of things at home, studied, preached, you know, two Bible classes a week, two sermons a week, did the bulletin. He's amazing. And he did that for 2 years. We did that for 2 years there. We were fortunate enough to not have to move out of the town that we lived in. We had bought a house. One of the works at the local congregation came up, the larger congregation in town. And we're now working as the associate minister there. And we mainly work with the youth. It's a whole new role. He's not in the pulpit every Sunday. He went from being in the pulpit every Sunday for 7 years to not. Let me tell you, the last year has been an adjustment for my husband and for our family. Although we're able to live and he's not having to work two jobs, finding his purpose and his place within that congregation has been a really interesting process to see him go through. So, although I may be young, I do feel like there's some things in this lesson that I may be able to offer you, or things that we've experienced that you too may have experienced at the same time. The lesson is different than most. It's a lesson that I can't go to the Bible and say, this is a preacher in his life, and this is exactly what she said to him when he felt this way. It's a lesson based off experience. We are going to use some scripture, of course, but it's a lesson based off thoughts, feelings. It's a little bit different than the normal lesson. You might find as we go through this lesson that it might stir up some of those emotions that I felt, some things as you're going to sit here and think, things that you thought that have happened in the past that you've kind of pushed back aside. It might bring some of that back, but you know what is so encouraging is those discouragements and those things that you might think about that happened in the past. You're sitting here today. You made it through. We made it through those things. And we're better people because of those experiences. Now, people tell you that when you're in the middle of those experiences, and I don't know about you, but that just didn't sound good to me then. But looking back now, I know we can be much better people on this side of those experiences. I want to begin by reading some statements. Maybe I'm just not cut out for this job. I'm so tired, and I'm just not sure how much longer I can do this. I don't feel effective anymore. Are people even listening to me? I can't be the person that they expect me to be. Now, you may be thinking, those are things that our husbands say. But you know what, ladies? Those are things that come out of our mouths at times, too. We have those same thoughts and those same feelings that our husbands experience during those difficult times. That's right. We can be discouraged at times. Now, as well as you know well that the life of a preacher and his wife go through different phases. You know, it seems like you can be on top of the world, and before you know it, you're back down in that valley again, but then you're right back up again. I can go back into the last 8 years of mine and Chris's life together and see many different phases, good and bad, that we have tackled. We've had our ups and downs, but through those experiences, I've found that it's almost impossible to pull each other up when we're both down. Isn't that hard? When you're both down, you just can't get that momentum to pull each other up. So I'm challenging us as their wives, not that we can't ever be discouraged, but let's try to keep ourselves up, because when they're in the middle of the battle, so that we're that person that can pull them up when they need us the most. Last year at PTP, I can't remember who said it, but I was in a lesson, and the lady said, you're allowed to have your pity parties. And you know what I'm talking about. We've got our little pity parties that life isn't fair, so-and-so happened. But I thought it was cute what she said. She said, you're allowed to have those. There's just two rules. You can only invite your closest friend, and you can only have it for 15 minutes, and then you just have to get over it. And I think that's good advice. Sometimes we just have to get over it, to not wallow in it. It makes it better to have your time, but then move on. I found that when I'm discouraged and confused about our church work, that it's best to find a former a preacher's wife to talk to about it. Being young, I have learned this lesson the hard way. I've learned lessons within the last year about confiding in people. And what Neil said on Monday about having close relationships in the congregation, I don't believe that's wrong. I don't. I think we need that with the people there. I think we become effective when we're that way with the people, when we get into their lives and we let them into our lives. But I do think it's important that we don't talk to the members about our discouragements within the church, that congregation. I've seen too many times families that become very close with the preacher and their family when things begin to happen and go wrong, or they even leave. I've seen those families, the friends, go through spiritual problems. I mean, difficult times, because they don't understand it. They don't live that life that we live. And it's really hard for them to see maybe the eldership in that congregation a certain way, or respect them after maybe they've heard too much. So find somebody that you can confide in, another preacher's wife. I was talking, a few things happened a few months ago and I needed somebody to talk to, and I happened to be on Facebook. I know Neil said that's bad, but no, not to be addicted to it. But Jennifer Webster was online, Wade Webster's wife, and I thought, oh, who better than to ask this question to? And I just kind of mentioned what was going through, and she had some wonderful things, a different way to look at it than I had been looking at it. And I was thankful for that conversation, and I was able to move on after that conversation with her. So pick up that phone and call other preachers' wives when you're feeling down. Now, I know you think, this isn't our subject, Amber, but like I said, when we're down, we can't pull our husbands up. So I want to talk a little bit about our discouragements and how to overcome that. Now, let's talk about some things specifically that can get our preachers down. I'm sorry. The list could go on forever for things that lead to discouragement within the local church, things that our husbands experience. But let's just hit on some high points. Personal struggle. This one's hard for me to talk about because we know our husbands better than anyone else. I think what Neil Pollard was saying also in his lesson on Monday, I told him he was all over my lessons the last 2 days. But he said that everybody's perception of the preacher as being perfect, and that one perfect person in the congregation that everyone can look to. And I get to thinking, and it's true, you can't really avoid it. It's natural, it's what happens, people respect them. But I got to thinking about that, and what a heavy burden for our husbands to bear. Isn't that heavy? I've seen that in my husband. I've seen the times where he was hurting most and struggling most, and he knew he couldn't let anybody see that for fear that it might cause them spiritual trouble also. And that is hard as a wife to hold a man that is in tears, struggling with his own personal sins and his own personal struggles. And all the while, we all have to be hush about it. That's hard, ladies. What the congregation doesn't know about our preacher is that he's not perfect. And I'm thankful he's not. I'm thankful because I am not perfect. And if he was, that'd be really hard to live with, wouldn't it? But he's not perfect. Let's see. It's often difficult for a man to admit when he struggles or even when he's wrong, isn't it? It's hard for them to admit that. Therefore, I found that personal struggles within a preacher can take him even lower than anything a member could ever say to him or an eldership could ever do. His personal struggles can take him lower faster, and it can be harder to pull him out of it. It's hard. An eldership can make your work wonderful, but a difficult eldership can make your work very, I mean, it can make it hard. Lucky where we are now, at Whitlock, that was one of our challenges at the smaller congregation. They had not appointed elders. And that's hard. I never, if all possible, want to go back to not working under an eldership, because you know why God designed that plan when you do work under an eldership. And I think people begin to see your husband as something that he's not. He's not an elder. He's not the shepherd. But yet, uniquely, he begins to bear that role just simply because it's lacking there. So that can be a struggle for some. Members can cause us to be discouraged, can't they? If allowed, the members at the local congregation can make or break you, can't they? They can make your life wonderful. But there are times when there's those unique individuals that we come across, like Kathy was saying about the dress. I just died at that story. I thought, that is so funny. It's not funny when it happened, but just to think, people are really amazing, the things that they say to us sometimes. What about that opinionated member? We all know those members that have their opinions, and they're not going to be afraid to tell you about it. Many preachers have been cut deeply by the words of an opinionated member. I think it's the toughest thing for me to witness. I know. It's the toughest thing for me to witness as my husband's wife, an opinionated member, who is making accusations and comments about them that are not even based on facts. It's not even true. But there's nothing you can do about those people that are going to believe what they want to believe about our husbands. But you want to see a fighting wife. I have to really pray in those situations to stop and to separate myself from the situation, because what's our natural reaction? To defend, isn't it? It's no wonder that the words of a member can cause great disappointment and discouragement in our lives of our husbands. What about those unfocused members? Those members that, regardless of what we say, do, give them out of the Word of God, they still choose to live their lives the way that they want to live. That's our freedom. But on the flip side, as a preacher and his family, your whole life revolves around helping people get to heaven. So when people don't let you help them, that can be very, very discouraging for the preacher. Death of members. You get close to people, things happen, death is a part of life. And each time that happens and causes discouragement, I think it's harder to get closer to individuals in fear that those things are going to happen. What about money? The wonderful preacher's salary that we all know. I can just say, we all say that we're married to amazing men, and we truly believe at times that they need to be making the money that they, quote, deserve. Ladies, we need to be supported in a way that we can live. But that's not our money. That's the Lord's money. And we need to be people that are not selfish and have that attitude of, we deserve this. It's easy to slip into that, but guard your heart, because I believe that's one way that Satan gets into our families, and he makes us think things that are not true. So be thankful for what they can support you. Go into a congregation knowing what they can support you, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You have to move on to something else. Don't take a work if you know it's just not going to be possible for your family to make it on that. But we've seen that. I've talked about my husband working with two jobs. I've seen the stress, what that does in your marriage, within your ministry. It's hard. And for a man who's the provider of your home, you begin to see those signs of discouragement in him, because it's a constant battle. It never goes away. But let us be like the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. Let's be wise consumers. Let's be women that are smart with our money, that help our husbands with the money, that they're not running up the credit card bill or making them feel like they're not giving us enough. Shame on us for that if we do. They don't need that pressure from us, and we have that responsibility with our home to be wise. And I love, I'm going to have to go on my soapbox, I love couponing. And if you have not entered the world of couponing, because it has changed, But you need to learn, and I'll teach you if you want me to teach you. But you will find there are so many ways to make your money stretch, and it does take a little bit more effort, a little bit more tiring. But be smart with those things. Take that ease on off, or that burden off of your husband. Okay, what does the discouraged man look like? We've talked about things that discourage them, but what does he look like? Like I have to tell you. But he may have lack of confidence, lack of desire, inability to focus on anything, afraid of taking chances and of taking risks, absolutely hopeless, negative. He goes into that mode of blaming others. Well, so-and-so didn't do this, or they're not doing this, they're not doing that. Early in our ministry, I used to think, what is wrong with him? He just needs to get over it, you know? But I wasn't actually seeing, I'm so glad that I'm smarter now, I wasn't actually seeing, these were just symptoms of a problem. They weren't the problem. The hopelessness wasn't the problem. The lack of confidence wasn't a problem. It was their symptoms. And like anything else, when there's symptoms, we have to go find the cause of it, don't we, before we can ever fix it. Let's see. During those times when I would see my husband go through these things, I would go into that critical mode, that nagging mode. Well, you didn't do this, or you didn't do that. Did you remember this? And that was, it's not the right way to handle it, but if you maybe going into things now, you can see it differently. He's acting like this. There has to be a reason why he's acting like this. This is not him. And maybe we can help them solve those problems. If you deal with the problem, ladies, of discouragement, you know what? The symptoms begin to disappear. And it's amazing to watch. We have the opportunity as a preacher's wife to help our preachers come alive during those times of discouragement. So what is encouragement? Listening to someone, believing in someone when no one else does, seeing someone's potential when they don't, forgiving someone when they fall, demonstrating unconditional love. We're going to read five scriptures, the ladies that I gave scriptures to. If you'll turn to Acts 18:27, and there's some ladies that are going to read that for us. Okay, so he was exhorted. And 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Okay. I know we're going quickly, but my time is fleeting as usual. 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Thank you. Hebrews 3:13. Okay, Hebrews 10:25. Okay. I've used several broad scriptures about exhorting one another, encouraging one another that we can find in the Bible. And they're all different situations, different types of encouragement that we've read. But as you can see, as Christians, we're commanded to encourage, aren't we? It's part of our responsibility as members of the church to encourage one another. It keeps us from sin. It keeps us going. That's why things like this keep us going, coming here and getting our cups full, as Kathy said. Why is it so hard for us as wives to encourage and look for people within the congregation that need us, but we don't see our husbands sometimes right next to us when they need us the most? Why is that? Maybe it's because we're comfortable with them. Maybe it's because they annoy us and we just don't feel like dealing with it sometimes. But you know what? We have a responsibility to them first before we do anyone else. And as I was doing this lesson, let me tell you, this lesson was stepping on my toes at certain times. We do not need to neglect our husbands. And we need to look for their needs as well as, I know several of you in here are very good at helping fulfill the needs of other people. I know you are. I know just by your personality. But sometimes I find that we overlook our husbands before, and we take care of everyone else before we do them. And it's an interesting, I will tell you, I've got a lot of material out of the book. It's called How to Encourage the Man in Your Life. It's by H. Norman Wright. Now, he's not a member of the church, so, and I'm kind of one of those readers where I pick and choose. I kind of go through the book. I don't know if it's just because I can't pay attention long enough to read something. So I haven't read everything in full, and so there may be some things in there that I wouldn't support. But he did have some good ideas in there about the psychology and those aspects of encouraging a man and how he thinks. So you might think about reading something like that. But he brought up 1 Corinthians 13, which we know is the love chapter, and he suggested reading it from a way, in a different way, as far as by loving our husbands, we're patient, kind, long-suffering. But how does my patience encourage him? How does my long-suffering encourage him? If you go through that love chapter, pick out those characteristics and think about ways that you can show him that by also encouraging him at the same time. You know, sometimes we wonder why we don't have the answers, but you know, God has the answers for us if we will look for it. So look within his pages of his word and you might see some new things. Okay, how do we actually encourage our preacher when he's down? I picked out like 5 things because we could have, like I said, the list could go on forever, but I felt like these were important. We need to be his spiritual helpmate. We need to pray. We need to personally pray for those things that we know our husbands are struggling with. And you know what? We don't need to remind them every day of their inadequacies. You know what? What better to take it to God and let him handle it than us try to handle it? Pray for your husband specifically for those things that maybe he doesn't even know he's struggling with. Pray for you as a wife that you can see the things that he needs. Pray together. That's a closeness that we all need within our relationships. I was reading a book and they had brought up the point of, you know, we go in the pity party that we were talking about earlier. He doesn't do this for me. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. And instead of nagging about him about those things, pray about those things. Let God know what you need from your husband and pray about those things and pray that you can be the type of wife. I have seen the dynamic in our marriage change when I began doing those things because I began doing more things for him at the same time. So it's amazing how if something's off balance, it can throw everything for a loop. Study. Search the scriptures for the type of wife that you're supposed to be for him. It's just like a recipe. When you take all the ingredients and you put them all together, it's this awesome thing in the end that tastes really good. But if you mess something up in that, I'm not a cookie maker. I do not like to bake. I don't. The cookies never turn out. They're just flat and terrible. I'm probably not following the recipe right. But if we take God's recipe for what a wife is supposed to be, who we're supposed to be for him, we will never feel like we're not useful. We'll never feel like we're not beautiful. We'll never feel like we're not the women that we need to be. If we're following that recipe, I always say it's like magic when you pull that out of the oven and it just looks perfect because you followed it to a T. That's the way our lives work with God's word. He gives us what we need. But are we willing to accept it sometimes? Stay strong in the faith. Have you ever seen, and we go through those times, even as preachers' wives, spiritually, where we kind of get down in our valleys also. But guard yourselves from that. Keep yourself strong. Be strong in the faith, because if your husband is having to pull you along spiritually, that's hard for him. We need to be right there working beside him with our cups full and not working against everything that he's trying to do within the congregation. As his spiritual helpmate, holds him accountable. And I say that in a way, it's just as your Christian brother. You have to help him guard his soul also. I don't know about you, but I don't want to go to heaven without my husband. That is going to be part of heaven for me. So hold him accountable when he makes mistakes. Not in a degrading way, not in a way that reminds him of his mistakes, but when he does make a mistake, it is our responsibility to help him see that as our Christian brother. Be their number one fan. I love this one. Isn't it natural for us to be our kid's number one fan? I don't know about you, but my kid is awesome. And he's wild. But I think he is awesome. And I'm his number one fan. I remember my mom being that way with me. It didn't matter what I did. It was awesome. And we need to be that way with our husbands. We are their number one fans. I think they shouldn't have to ask us when they get in the car after church, did you like that bulletin article? What did you think about that? Or what did you think about my sermon? Let's be proactive. Let's show them that we're interested in what they're doing. You know, honey, I read this the other day. I saw where you'd been working on this, and I really like this, this, and this. What better than being proactive? Don't make them ask. Be interested in what they're doing and the work that they're doing. And it will become habit. Once you do it so long, it's just going to be a part of your relationship. It's part of what you do together. You need to encourage them when they've had a job well done, but encourage them also when it may not have been their best, find something positive. Because you know what? When it's not their best, they usually already know it, don't they? They got that look on their face, or, you know, it's kind of in that mood when he gets in the car. And I think if we can find the positive in it, then it helps them kind of shift their focus and keep them out of going down that road of discouragement. I think about a good basketball fan or baseball fan. My brother-in-law is a huge baseball fan, and he can just quote off the statistics, you know. He just lets you know. And when somebody tries to attack a baseball fan's favorite team, well, so, you know, you guys lost that game, you know, where was so-and-so, what does that sports fan do? They respond right back with the statistics and how great they are and give proof, don't they? This is what they're good at. You can't judge them off of one game. Why can't we do that for our husbands? When they go into that mode of, you know, I'm not good at this anymore. I'm not sure. They start doubting. Their heads are full of doubt. Why can't we quote their statistics? This is what you've done. And have this huge list of things that you're wonderful at. It won't help but switch their focus to, well, maybe I'm not so terrible. Maybe I can do something right. Believe in them even when they don't want to. When they don't. Maybe they can't see it. The story was told of a high school student, and he got in trouble with some other boys, and the principal only got on to him. He chose to discipline him, but not the other boys. Well, as any high school student, you would not be happy about this. So he goes to the high school student, sees the principal in the hall one morning. He said, why did you never get on to these other boys? You're just picking on me. He pulled him into his office and he said, those other boys are headed down a road that I can't help. But you've got potential. You're different. There's something inside of you. You know, that's where he was a junior at the time that happened. By his senior year, his grades were A's instead of C's and D's. He graduated from high school, graduated from college, and remained close to that principal. Sometimes what our husbands think or even what we think is not always the reality. It's not always so bad. We need to see that. We need to believe in them. My husband, Chris, as you see him around him here, he's a quiet man. He's always been a quiet man. He's a humble man. He's very reserved. And when we got married, he really lacked a lot of confidence. I really didn't know about that until I lived with him and saw him on a daily basis. I really began to see him for who he was and the things that he was struggling with. And, you know, it was, like I said, it was one of those symptoms, and once we got to the problem, it was amazing. Ladies, it's amazing the man that he is today. And there's some in this room that can vouch for that. They've known him from the beginning. He's always been a good man, but he is confident. He's a wonderful gospel preacher, and he can do anything he wants to do. But there was a time where Chris Butler did not believe that about himself. So I challenge you as their wives, when you see something in them that maybe they don't see, help them to see it. I think sometimes we want to tell them what we think they can do, and then they feel inadequate quickly. Find a way to show them. Bring it up. You know, have you ever thought about this? You know, I really think I can see you doing that. Encourage them, see their potential even when they don't. And just like the high school student who changed because somebody believed in him, our husbands are the same way. And I hope each of you can experience that transformation, because it is an amazing thing as a wife to see that in your husband. Stand by their side during the hard times. You may even have to wrap your arms around them and hold them up till they can stand on their own two feet. Okay, Shanika, I'm moving. All right. accept them for who they are and be willing to forgive them. Very difficult with their wives, because a lot of times who they are and the things that they do affect us before they affect anyone else, and that's difficult. We talked about them having their own personal struggles, but we know that they're not perfect. They struggle and fall against the wiles of the devil just like the rest of the people. I'm trying to skip some stuff. One of the greatest gifts my husband can give me is opening himself up to me. Do you feel that way? When he lets me see him for who he really is, that is a gift from them, ladies, because men, that's not easy for them to do. So when they do that, cherish that. Show them compassion. Give them what they need, and don't be critical in those times, because guess what? He'll never give you that gift again. It'll be too scary. So show him that. I had a friend who we were talking when I was preparing for this lesson, and she said, I don't know about you, but at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're up with a screaming baby, you're not really all that rational, okay? So she said she's up with a screaming baby at 3 in the morning. She makes this list. She's staring at her husband as he's sleeping, you know, and she's holding the baby. And she makes this list of everything he's not. And she said, when he gets up, I'm going to read him every bit of this list, and I'm just going to let him have it. And luckily, you know, as we sleep, the rational comes back. And she woke up and she thought, I am so thankful he's never read me my list. I'm not reading him that list. So be accepting of them. Focus on his positive traits, not his negative traits. When you shift that focus from what he's not doing, when you get off your pity party of what he's not giving you and you focus on what he is, ladies, I'm sorry, but when I shift my focus from that, he is the most wonderful man in the world, and I can't get enough of him. And we need to do that. Shift that focus. Work closely at his side. I'm not going to talk most about that because Neil Pollard talked about that a lot yesterday, and we're running out of time. Two are much better than one. Let the congregation, when they see him, they know you're there or you're behind the scenes working. Don't pull him along in his work, but help encourage him. I found with my husband, if I ask him if he needs any help with doing something, there might be something I see that's not getting done, and it's making me a little crazy, a little nervous. And if I say, you know, is there anything I can help you with? And I phrase it just differently than, you're not doing this. And I offer myself to him. He said, yeah, you know what? You can probably help me with that. And then it gets done. You can be an encouragement to him just by doing that for him. If you find that you word things in a way that gets a really bad reaction out of your husband, stop, think about it. Even though it doesn't make sense to you, reword it. And it's like magic. You can get a lot done. And it's a lot more peaceful that way. Last point is to show some respect. I believe that man's one of his biggest needs is respect, isn't it? I know that we need to see them as a person, respect their ideas, their thoughts, their opinions about things. And men receive respect, and things come across as showing them respect in different ways. So each of our husbands are probably different in that way. That's why I didn't even list specific things, because that's something you need to talk with your husband about. But I bet if you asked him, he'd be very willing to tell you. Now, if I asked my husband, he'd say, I'm going to have to think about that. And he would for days. But then he would come back and he would say, I have an answer. And and he would give it to me. What better way to show respect than the respect that he thinks about that? How he feels, what he needs from you. So be a good listener. And my conclusion, I'm going to give you some homework. So if you've been taking notes, I want you to write down these three questions. When you leave here, I want you to ask yourself, I was going to do a handout and then I didn't, sorry. So, number one, does my husband show the symptoms of discouragement? We talked about those. Does he show symptoms of discouragement? Number two, what things may be discouraging my husband right now? And number three, what things am I currently doing to encourage my husband? I think if you ask yourself these three questions, you're going to be able to evaluate your life, your relationship with your husband, the things that you're doing for him right now. And I think if you don't know how to answer those questions, then you need to start thinking in the past, what are some things that I've seen cause discouragement? Maybe this is a symptom of this, but start kind of evaluating things in your life right now. Also, ask yourself these questions every month or so. This is a constant. We talked about the phases. Constantly be evaluating this. Now, some questions I would suggest asking your husband might be, what are some specific ways I can do to show you respect? We talked about that. What are some specific things I can do to show you respect? Okay, this question's going to be hard and you may not like the answer, but we need to know. What are some things that I do that discourage you? Because a lot of times we have no clue we're even doing it. But what are some things that I do that discourage you? What can I do to encourage you more? And what things, if any, are discouraging you right now? If you had this conversation every month, what problems it would ward off? Just that open line of communication. It will show your husbands that you care about them and their well-being. We have an opportunity, ladies, as preacher's wives, to help spread the Lord's word just by supporting and encouraging our husbands. When people comment on the role of the woman in the church, it's one of my soapboxes when they start talking about it being one of weakness and suppression, that we can't do anything as women. I get frustrated, I get angry, because it's anything but true. Our role is anything but that. We have the power to inspire, and we have the power to mold the men that are working the hardest to spread the gospel in this world. The chance to make a difference in bringing more souls to Christ just by encouraging our husbands. Let us leave here today better wives, seeking to hold our husbands up high as they sacrifice for our Lord here on this earth. Let's close with Proverbs 12, verse 25. It says, "Heaviness in the heart of a man maketh it stoop, but a good word maketh it glad."